From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
Hello from South Berkeley, below Ashby.
I live in North Richmond.
Kentfield.
Oh, I live in San Jose, near Campbell.
Bayview.
Coming up, we'll learn more about the people who rely on the East Bay bus service, AC Transit.
I love bus. I get on a bus and I just feel good. And I know where it's going to stop.
Then we'll find out about a boutique San Francisco soup kitchen that's using some special ingredients to heal its diners.
It has a power to get rid of all your negativities. It has a power to kill all the skin diseases. And it has a power to rebuild your immune system.
And we'll come face to face with a real-life Rosie the Riveter.
This was an amazing undertaking by extraordinary, ordinary people.
We're leaving the ordinary behind us today on Cross Currents. When we talk about public transit in the Bay Area, it's often focused on the big public systems like Muni or BART. The two BART strikes last year caused major gridlock across the Bay Area, but most of BART's 350,000 riders still had other ways to get to work. That wouldn't have been the case if AC Transit had gone on strike at the same time like its union threatened. AC Transit is the bus agency for the East Bay, and it serves almost 200,000 riders each day. But this bus system's riders are disproportionately lower income, elderly, and less likely to own a car. Over the past few years, the agency's seen deep service cuts and major fare increases. At $2.10, it's the Bay Area's most expensive local bus ride. KLW's Isabel Angel recently spent time riding on AC Transit, and she'll introduce us to some of the locals who rely on the service.
My name is Levante Ryan Thompson, and I am from Oakland, California.
Levante Thompson is a 16-year-old sophomore at a charter high school in Oakland. He rides the bus every day, just like 60 to 95% of his peers.
My bus ride is extremely long. Sometimes I tend to fall asleep. Not all the time, just sometimes rarely.
Levante recently moved from Oakland to San Francisco to live with his godmother in Hunters Point, but he wanted to stay at the same high school. He likes the teachers, and everybody knows who he is. So every morning, his godmother drops him off at the bus stop in Emeryville on her way to work in Crockett. From there, he takes the 57 bus to Castlemont. It's a 45-minute ride, almost the full length of the bus's route.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it, but I would prefer to drive or get a ride, but I don't have a problem with catching AC Transit.
Is there something about it that is kind of annoying, or like any things that are kind of annoying?
When the buses do not leave on time. They do not leave on time. That really gets on my nerves because when the buses be late, that makes me late. It is very frustrating because when I become late to school, then there's detention, all these things, and I don't have anybody to call to excuse my tardies. Today I'm going to be a little late to school because I got on the bus that comes at 7:10. I usually leave at 7 o'clock, but I was a little late this morning. I'm actually going to call in to the school and let them know.
How old were you when you started riding the bus?
I was catching the bus 5th grade, so I was about 10.
By yourself?
By myself.
Did you like doing that when you were 10?
Yeah, because I felt like I was a grown man. I felt like I had some independence catching the bus by myself at 10 years old.
Do you think that was good for you when you were younger to have that responsibility?
I think that it was very amazing for me to have that responsibility. It was very amazing for me to catch it, and not only catch it, but catch it by myself, because I was exposed to different type of cultures, different type of behaviors, and things like that. It opened my eyes a lot.
Levante did get to school late, but he assured me that his tardy would be excused. A spokesman for the Oakland schools confirmed that the district gives some leeway to students who are late because of public transit.
My name is Walter Davis, and I was born in Roganville, Texas, in 1924.
Like Levante, Walter Davis of West Oakland belongs to a group that disproportionately depends on AC Transit. He's a senior, 89 years old.
And I have been in Oakland since 1944.
On the day we meet, Davis is wearing a snazzy blue suit, white hat, and pristine black and white shoes. He tells me he was once named the best-dressed man in Oakland, and I believe it. We meet up at the West Oakland Senior Center, where he goes to play dominoes, and wait for the 26 bus on 18th and Adeline. Then I ride with him back to his home, a senior community not too far away. The whole ride is fun for him.
I love bus because I get on the bus and I just feel good. And I know where it's going to stop me, and I got a little walking distance to go.
I'll get that for you, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir.
No problem.
How are you, sir? How long have you been riding the bus?
Oh, I've been riding the bus. I've been riding the bus ever since 1956. I enjoyed it. And I enjoy riding now, the bus. I really enjoy it.
So you had seen somebody that you knew earlier on the bus. Is that common? Do you often see people that you know?
Oh, yes. I see all the time someone I know on the bus. And back then, that little young lady there, been knowing ever since she was a little girl. Now she got babies. And they know me now. Yeah, so I meet all type of people here on the bus. All kind and all type.
As we get off the bus, Davis sees another person he knows. And another.
My name is Nancy Piazza and I'm from Redding, California.
Just like Thompson and Davis, Nancy Piazza relies on AC Transit to get around. She's blind. Right now, she's staying at the Orientation Center for the Blind in Albany. It's a state-run residential program that helps people learn to live with vision loss. She'll be here for about 4 more weeks before she goes home to Reading. AC Transit estimates that about 10,000 of its daily riders are disabled. For many of those, including a lot of blind people, the bus is their only way to go shopping, get to doctor's appointments, or commute to work.
Reading can learn a lot from down here.
The buses, that is. Today, we ride the 72 down San Pablo. So, do you take the bus often around here?
Yes, I do. It's my normal form of transportation.
The bus system here, for people who have to rely on it, you know, do you think it's a good substitute for cars or something like that?
Yes, I do. They go every place we need to go. The timing is good with it because the bus comes approximately every 15 to 20 minutes. The drivers are really good. They help us if we don't know where a stop is. They're good about saying it's here. They make sure that we're actually off the bus and orientated before they pull away.
Here's the bus. Thank you. Is there anything that you don't really like about riding the bus?
The bus system here is really good because it's close to my school. It takes me any place I do want to go, but the travel time sometimes where if I was in a car, it would take less than half the time to get there.
Piazza is pretty pro AC Transit, but not everyone is.
The bus drivers are so mean.
The bus drivers are mean? This is Javier Rocabado, and he was a little worked up when he interrupted our conversation.
I was waiting and on 72R, which is the rapid. And this driver stopped in front of it, and it didn't allow me to catch the number, the bus I was supposed to take. And it just didn't stop for me, so I'm late for my work now.
Is that usual that it's like that? Like, is it all the time or sometimes?
Seems like it's all the time for me. I don't have any good luck in here.
Can you tell your boss that the bus was late and it's not your fault?
Oh, yeah, but he's going to think it's an excuse. You know, oh, again,
Rocabado is right. AC Transit has real problems that can make life difficult for the people who rely on it. Rocabado was late to his painting job in Oakland, and Levante Thompson was late to school. We leave Rocabado and soon board a second bus. What did you think about that? So that guy, when we were on the bus, he started talking about how he thinks that all the drivers are really rude. Did you agree with that?
He might be having some bad experiences. I haven't had a bad experience yet with the drivers around here. They've all been very pleasant and very kind to me.
And you ride it, you would say, a fair amount?
Yes, at least every other day I'm on a bus going someplace. Can you stop at San Carlos, please? I don't know if she heard me. Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
AC Transit serves all kinds of people. But more often than not, riders are like the four people in this story. They don't just ride AC Transit, they need AC Transit. And they appreciate what it does for them. Nancy Piazza will be done with her program at the Orientation Center for the Blind next month. She's headed back to Reading after that, and dreading the bus service, which she says is a lot worse than AC Transit. For Cross Currents, I'm Isabel Angel.
You can find more local stories at KALW.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Community service can come in a lot of shapes and sizes, and in the Bay Area, it comes in a lot of different flavors, too. In San Francisco, the nonprofit organization Curry Without Worry brings the usually hard-to-find Nepali cuisine to anyone who's hungry.
Happy Tuesday, everybody!
Each week, volunteers help prepare and serve free dishes in the Civic Center's UN Plaza. The gathering attracts both homeless people and those who are simply craving a delicious Nepali meal. KALW's Rachel Wong got in line just in time to bring us this story.
Around 5 p.m. on a cold, windy Tuesday, an eclectic mix of people stand in a long line at Civic Center's UN Plaza in San Francisco. Some have big travel backpacks, a couple have tough-looking dogs, and a few are dressed like they just came from work. They're all standing patiently, like they've done this before. A bright orange and yellow minivan pulls up onto the plaza, and a team of volunteers wearing orange aprons emerge and quickly set up tents, tables, and giant metal vats of steaming food. You can smell ginger and garlic.
Happy Tuesday. Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to make it a happy Tuesday.
A free meal is served here every Tuesday, courtesy of an organization called Curry Without Worry. The meal is pretty different from many local soup kitchens. No sloppy joes, no mac and cheese. Chef Hari Tamang explains what's on the menu today.
Dal, lentil soup, mixed vegetable, rice, achar, puri.
Puri is a fried bread, and achar is a spicy tomato-based chutney made with a Himalayan spice called timor. Tamang picks up one of the timor seeds, which looks like a peppercorn.
And this is the very healthy for our human body. It has a power to cure your cancer. It has a power to get rid of all your negativities. It has a power to kill all the skin disease. And it has a power to rebuild your immune system.
These are pretty strong claims for a spice, but the good intentions are clear. The spices are used alongside fresh vegetables, not canned ones, and everything is vegetarian.
There's at least two servings right there of vegetables, and that's really hard to get.
That's Cynthia Jean Lee, who lives in a shelter and relies on free meals like this one. Vegetables are only part of the reason Lee shows up here.
Yeah, I'm trying to network and meet people. I'm really a Texan at heart, and Texans are gregarious people. And cities are not usually places you can be gregarious, but this is the best I can do, is network with all these nice people. So,
she's networking with a pretty diverse crowd here. You often don't know who's homeless and who isn't. Like Frankie LaFleur. He's got a home outside the city, but he's made a habit of coming by before his graveyard shift at work. He always helps set up and then grab something to eat.
It's not like a food line. It's more of a gathering of different walks of life that come here to eat.
God bless Curry Without Worry.
Thank you. That's karma.
Everyone just blends in, and that's the point. Volunteer and board member Jerry Coakley describes it.
We're all eating together, we're all in the hearth, we're all in community, and for a moment everything stops and we're connecting.
This connecting is what the founder, Shawan Nepali, intended when he started the organization. These days he splits his time between here and Curry Without Worry's Nepal chapter, which provides pretty much the same thing, but attracts mostly Kathmandu street children. He himself grew up in an orphanage in Nepal and received help from others to make it to the United States. So all of this is his way of giving back. Volunteer Jerry Coakley says she's also seen this desire to give back among some of the people they serve. She remembers a struggling student she once served meals to, returning later to repay the favor by volunteering.
It could be any of us at any time, you know, in that line for whatever reason. But it's fun to see that a meal can change a person's life. It makes you want to go to Nepal. It makes you want to create a bridge.
In a way, Curry Without Worry is already a bridge. And to experience it, all you really need to do is make your way to the Civic Center on a Tuesday night. And to come hungry. For Cross Currents, I'm Rachel Wong.
You can find a link to Curry Without Worry on our website. It's klw.org.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Our next story is about doing a service for your community, but in a much bigger sense. During World War II, the city of Richmond quadrupled in size when about 70,000 workers flocked to work at the shipyards that dotted the bay's shoreline. At the war's height, women made up more than a quarter of the Richmond shipyard's workforce.
We are still short millions of hands. We must call upon women. Women are called upon to leave their homes and take jobs.
For the first time, women were allowed to work in high-paying trades previously only done by men. But according to 92-year-old Betty Soskin, who worked in Richmond at the time, the story of Rosie the Riveter...
That was a white woman's story. I was an African-American woman, colored in those days.
Soskin told another side of this story to KALW's Callie Shanafelt in this segment that originally aired in 2010.
Betty Reed Soskin was 4 years old when she moved to the East Bay. She grew up there in a Creole and Cajun community from New Orleans. She got married in 1942, soon after the United States entered World War II. Soskin says the Bay Area quickly became a hub of wartime shipbuilding.
It took seven people to support everyone on the front.
And workers were in demand. But there was a hierarchy, Soskin says. First hired at the Richmond shipyards were men who were too old to fight, and boys who were too young to go, then single white women, then married white women...
Then black men to support the Rosies, do the heavy lifting. Eventually, black women, but that wasn't until 1944, though there were some exceptions.
So Soskin says when she was looking for work as a 21-year-old African-American woman in 1942, her options were limited.
I was seen as only fit to be a domestic servant or to work in agriculture, which means picking cotton.
In fact, Henry Kaiser recruited workers for the shipyards from cotton-growing southern states, such as Mississippi, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas.
And he brought to the Bay Area the entire system of segregation as it existed in the South. He brought black and white people together. These were largely sharecroppers of both races, who would not be sharing either drinking fountains or schools or hospitals or public accommodations or even cemeteries for another 20 years back in their places of origin.
Prior to this great migration, Soskin says racial discrimination in the Bay Area was more subtle than Jim Crow segregation. So when people came from the South, they shook up the racial dynamics of Richmond.
White people, even at that level, that economic level, expecting a continuation of white privilege. Black people expecting a better deal.
And while many African Americans did find a better life in the Bay, Soskin says they didn't exactly find an equitable one. Black workers weren't allowed into the shipyard's Boilermaker Union. So in 1943, they established the auxiliary, A36, for black workers. That union hired Betty Soskin to work in the administration office.
All those people who worked out of our union hall had helper or trainee on their union cards. That would mean that they would not be in competition with white workers after the war ended.
But having a union card, even as a helper or trainee, usually meant better wages. And while Soskin never saw a ship, other black women fought to get jobs as welders or burners in the shipyard. Margaret Archie, who followed her husband to the shipyards from Texas, was one of those women.
Mostly, they wanted women to sweep. And my husband, no, you ain't gonna sweep. Say, you sweep all your life. So you gonna well.
So Archie's husband went down to the union hall.
You had to know somebody that was in the union to get you in.
The person her husband knew charged them $20 to admit Archie into the union so she could become a welder. She says it was a rare accomplishment for a black woman in the 40s.
All the day long, whether rain or shine, she's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory, Rosie the Riveter.
By the end of the war, Archie and her co-workers had built 747 ships in 4 years and 8 months. Betty Soskin.
This was an amazing undertaking by extraordinary, ordinary people, and that's the story that I relate to, because I'm one of those extraordinary, ordinary people.
Now, at 88 years old, Soskin has had time to process her role on the home front during World War II. Despite the great social changes of that time, she still remembers the pain of the discrimination she faced as a black woman.
We were forced to hire men too old to fight and boys too young to go. Women out of their homes, disrupting the entire American mystique of what it means to be a man or a woman in order to gear up for that great mobilization. Even at that time, we were willing to sacrifice on the altar of racial segregation human potential of a huge, huge percentage of people based upon color.
But Soskin worries that we haven't learned from this history. She fears we still hold people back because of race, class, and gender.
I am concerned that as an American, there are still practices that are sacrificing African Americans, Latinos, that are crippling the country. I think that's a tragedy, and maybe that's the lesson of the mobilization that I take away.
And now she has a platform to share those lessons. Betty Reed Soskin is a park ranger at the Rosie the Riveter World War II Memorial Park. She's the oldest park ranger in the nation.
Rosie, Rosie, Rosie the Riveter on the assembly line.
In Richmond, I'm Callie Schanefeld for Cross Currents.
Betty Reed Soskin is now 92 years old, and she's still working 5 days a week at the Visitor Center in the Rosie the Riveter National Historical Park. You can find out more information about the park at kalw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. And today we're rolling out a new series on Cross Currents. We're calling it the X segment, and it'll be a mystery every Monday until you hear it. Today, it's the best press release ever of the day. Here's our executive editor, our own X-Man, Ben Trefney, to tell us about it.
It's Super Bowl week, and if you watch TV, you might have seen this ad with a huge linebacker and his mom talking about food.
Sit down. You need some Campbell's Chunky Soup before today's big game. New chunky cheeseburger.
I love cheeseburgers.
I know you do.
Yeah, so right on cue, the other day, I get this unsolicited package here at KALW. It's a press release for Campbell's with three cans of chunky soup in it. Got my chunky cheeseburger soup, got my spicy chicken quesadilla soup, and my Philly-style cheesesteak soup. Well, it turned out it was a pretty nice day to get free soup in the mail. My colleague Martina Castro, she didn't have lunch.
So I took the Philly-style cheesesteak soup.
And Seth Samuel, he didn't have any lunch either.
So I took the spicy chicken quesadilla soup.
And I ate the cheeseburger soup. It tasted like cheeseburger soup.
I couldn't finish mine.
And instead of trying mine, I didn't eat lunch that day.
So I told Campbell's, yeah, thanks, but we're not going to do a story about it. Except this one, because it is the best press release ever of the day.
And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Jen Cheehan, Audrey Dilling, Seth Samuel, Nina Gensler-Debs, Liz Mack, Daphne Matsyaraki, Mary Reese, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, and Rachel Wong. Today's show was produced by Ashley Ann Krigbaum and engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor.
I love cheeseburgers.
I know you do.
And because of your support, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. The music you're hearing now is from Tom Rhodes. He started out as a songwriter for other musicians when he was 14 years old. He established himself as a performer while living in Brooklyn and now calls the Bay Area home. Tom Rhodes will be performing tomorrow at San Francisco's Bazaar Cafe, where he's been songwriter in residence on Tuesdays all month. Music starts at 7 p.m. You can find a link to all of that information along with more local music and more local stories at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. I lived in two streets, learning life lessons, but now